Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to On the Preds with me, your host, Alex Daugherty of A to Z Sports, as usual, and also, as usual, Sean Smith, formerly of On the Forecheck, but stay tuned, there's going to be some news on that soon, I'm sure Sean will share, not today, but sometime very soon, but he is still here, and he still talks about the Preds with us on this show, On the Preds, so glad to have him. Sean, how's it going?
Pretty good. Having a real good day today. Everything's going great at the Smith House. Real exciting time.
That's good.
Excited to talk about some hockey. And, you know, I'm excited about a few other things we're going to discuss today. So
we have a fun show today because we are smack in the middle of the most dead period for NHL hockey you could probably have. Free agency is basically over, except for, you know, you're going to see signings. Someone's going to sign Nazem Kadri. Someone's going to sign Phil Kessel, someone's going to sign PK Subban, who still doesn't have a team. But really, for the most part, it's dead. Training camp doesn't start for another month and a half. So we've got just nothing going on. So we're going to spend some time over the next few weeks doing some rankings. We're going to rank some people. Just like, you know, hotornot.com back in the day.
Ooh, yeah, say like a slam book back in middle school. That should be right. Fun.
We're going to rank the Preds by position. Today, we are starting with the defenders. So we're going to go in reverse order, starting with the, I guess you could say, worst on the team, all the way to the best on the team. We will, in the coming weeks, we will also talk about the goaltenders. A bit easier on that one. We'll probably combine that one with another subject, but just because that's no mystery there. But I do want to talk about it because there has been a signing that we didn't see coming. So where does, you know, Kevin Lankinen and fit in there. So, and then we'll do wings and then centers. We'll separate out the centers and the wings. It's a little tricky because, you know, Mikael Granlund, I mean, he does play some center, but he's more of a wing. Matt Duchene, same thing. Like Duchene and Granlund are like a center wing combo. And, you know, Johansson's like the most like consistent center on the team. So it's a little tricky there, but we'll cover that when we get to it. But the other thing we're going to do, and if you hear a little bit of like nasally stuff going on with me, I'm in my fifth day of isolation with COVID. So feeling a lot better, but, you know, it's still kind of congestion and such, but anyways, what we are going to talk about in the second half of the show is really, really fun because Sean and I want to discuss an amazing bit of found footage.
Oh man.
I know Sean's excited about this.
Chomping at the bit.
It is not really found footage. I think the video has like 4.5 million views on YouTube. It's not found footage. But if you haven't seen it, it will be found footage for you. And it's really, really fun. So, yeah, that's pretty much what we're doing. We're going to talk Preds defenders today. Pretty exciting, right?
I'm excited.
So for this, we are going to first talk about the guys that didn't make the cut. So there's some defensemen on the minor leagues that we're not really going to talk about because they're really probably not going to make appearances. Kevin Gravel, the new guy they signed, Roland McCown, Jordan Gross, those guys came together. Luke Prokop, Adam Willsby, Jack Mattier, I think it's Mattier, right?
Mattier, yeah.
Mattier, Jack Mattier, Spencer Stastny. These guys are all probably Milwaukee guys for the majority of the year. Don't think we'll see them unless there's some sort of injury situation. So let's start with the seventh best defenseman on the team, in my opinion. It is Mark Borowiecki, coming in at number seven. Ding, ding, number seven. I think Mark Borowiecki is at number seven now, only because the Lozon signing and trade puts him at number seven. However, don't be shocked if Mark Borowiecki is in the opening night lineup on opening night over Lozon, because, in my opinion, I think Mark Borowiecki is one of the most respected, revered, liked players in that locker room outside of like a Pecorine, honestly. Like, everyone loves Mark Borowiecki. Everyone. The other players, the coaches, the team staff, the media, everyone loves Mark Borowiecki. He's a great dude. Wouldn't be shocked if he's in there on opening night. Don't know how much he's going to play, but.
I mean, you know, I'm the champion of the third pairing defender anyway, so I'll definitely agree with you that he is probably the most respected guy out there. And I think you make a good case for why you would see him in the lineup on opening night over someone like Lozon. But I'm going to tell you, I don't have him ranked seventh. Seventh for me is Lozon. And the reason I have him ranked seventh, and it's really, it's not any knock to him, honestly. It's not like I'm looking at the talent on the team and just ranking him last because I think he's worse than everybody. Mm-hmm. I just haven't seen everything he has to offer. And so I think there's definitely potential there. It's just that he joined the team late in the season. He didn't play a whole lot before he got hurt. And quite honestly, I think, you know, I think there's promise there. I'm really hoping that this season allows him, you know, maybe being with the team for the full training camp, being with the team for the full season, developing that chemistry, and getting used the way they kind of see him, you know, to be used as a player, should bring him some regularity. And I think you'll see him improve from what you saw, say, last season, and maybe from, you know, the way he was with his other teams, which we both know is fairly turbulent. So I'm going to put him seventh just because I think he can do more than I've seen, but I haven't seen it yet. It's not a knock as much as it's just saying, until I see something else, that's probably where I've got him sitting.
So Lozon is number seven for me. So seven and number six for me. Six and seven are Lozon and Borowiecki for me consecutively. So there's not a huge amount of difference. I mean, the only difference is age, right? In my opinion, the only difference is age. Lozon is 25 and Borowiecki is 32.
Practically a senior citizen at this point.
Yeah.
Miracle, really.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, I mean, they're very identical in terms of size. Borowiecki, I think, is a little bigger, but not by much. I mean, they're pretty much similar size-wise, and what they are out on the ice to do is very similar. So you give Lozon – I give Lozon the edge just in terms of age, only because he's a little bit younger. Maybe he's a little faster. I haven't seen that yet. So I think it's fine putting him six and seven. Number five, I have is Dante Fabbro. And is that who you have as number five, Dante Fabbro?
I definitely have Dante Fabbro at five. I also want to say that we flip-flopped six and seven. I have Borowiecki at six on my list. Right. And really, you know, just because of the familiarity with the product is why I put him there. But yeah, I've got Fabbro at fifth. You know, I had a hard time with Dante Fabbro. I'm going to be honest. I can make an argument for him being a spot higher, but when we get to that higher spot, I think we may find that we have the same person there. I just, as hard as I want to make the argument that he should move up, I can't put him ahead of number four. I just don't think that he's had the season that we expected him to have compared to this other player, if that makes sense.
So Fabbro has gotten every chance to prove that he deserves to be a top four guy. And I just think he has not reached it yet. 19 minutes a game as a 21-year-old. That's fantastic. I mean, a 21-year-old coming and playing 19 minutes a game. He gets basically the same amount of minutes the next year and has the same amount of points. No progress. Same amount of points and same amount of like impact on the game.
Yeah.
Last year, he improves in his output. His production goes up, but I think it's pretty clear that he was a beneficiary of a pretty incredible year by Roman Josi and some good years on the offensive end. I mean, he had 21 of his 24 points were at even strength, which is very good. He didn't play on the power play, but I think Fabbro improved a little bit last year, at least in most people's minds. But I think that the price tag is just too high for where he really needs to be. I mean, $2.5 million a year, $2.4 million, sorry. He's an RFA next year, so his qualifying offer has to be at least that. It's really tough to see where Dante Fabbro is going to go up this year. I mean, especially with the trade for Ryan McDonagh, which we'll talk about in a minute. Skills-wise, it seems pretty clear that Alex Carrier has passed him, which I never thought would have been the case 3 years ago. He is what he is. He's a kind of a tweener. He's not big. He's not small. He's not fast. He's not slow. He just doesn't really do anything particularly well.
You know, it's interesting you put it that way. That's a good term. I think, too, one of the things that I made the comment a moment ago that he didn't have the year that we expected him to have. My reasoning behind that, if you look back, you mentioned he's very young. He came straight from college, finished his college season and came straight to the team, joined them in the playoffs. And then his next season, it was the bubble season, the season that ended early because of COVID. And then coming back and having the shortened season, it's just, gosh, it just seems like the poor guy hasn't really had a chance to get settled into the team. And I know, he's been on the team the whole time, but you think about all the reasons that a lot of people were giving John Hines for, he hasn't had a full training camp yet and things like that. And you could say the same for Dante Fabbro. I think the difference is that John Hines, comparatively speaking, had a pretty good season as a coach with a lot of, really good seasons from a lot of guys, a playoff appearance, setting an identity for the team. You kind of were hoping that Fabbro would come in after having all that experience and then getting this full season, full training camp, all this everything, and being able to put all the pieces together. But what ends up happening is you've got a guy that's been in the AHL for quite a long time. I've been excited about Carrier for longer than I've been excited about Fabbro, but Fabbro got the chance first, played the big minutes first, put on the gold sweater first, and stayed in it. And then here comes Carrier, and boom, I feel like he outperformed him.
The other thing about it, Fabbro, I think it would be easy to forget this, but he's not bad. He's not awful back there. And he can do some things offensively that are pretty good. I mean, if they don't qualify him next year, if they move on, you could quickly see you didn't really realize what you had until it was gone. So Fabbro really isn't that bad. It's just it is about the hype. He was first round pick. He was not expected to save the team or anything, but expected to really contribute and hasn't blown everything away. So Fabbro number five makes sense. And then that means I think we're both at number four is Alex Carrier. So talking about him in particular, his path to the NHL has been pretty fascinating. I mean, he makes his debut at 20 years old and then spends 3 years in the AHL. Debut in 2016-17 was premature. Let's be honest. That didn't need to happen. But spending 3 years. I mean, that's Jakob Trenin. Trenin had a similar thing. Trenin spent so long in the AHL, and then came up and that was producing kind of thing. I mean, it's a testament to the Milwaukee system.
Yeah, you get. I think it's funny when you talk about a prospect. And it's interesting, these guys start having, national attention, international attention paid to them at a very young age. And you hear so much about them, you feel like, they should come in after their draft year ready to play in the NHL. And, a lot of guys, it's a few years in the AHL, and even more guys, it's still a few years in junior hockey before coming to the AHL. So to say that his debut was premature, sure. I think it was nice that they gave him a chance to come see what he could do. And it's just, you know, you look at how stacked Nashville has been defensively for so long that it's hard sometimes to make an argument to bring a guy up from the AHL if you're not 100% sure they're ready.
I'm trying to remember what happened that he even made his debut. I think that's the year that obviously they had PK, Subban still in town. So it was the top four was pretty much set. I'm trying to remember who was even on what. Oh, Matt Irwin was there. Anthony Boteto was there. Matt Carl, that was one of the ones. So Matt Carl, they signed. He plays like two games and then doesn't come back and he retires basically. So it didn't make any sense why he even appeared there. I think he played two games that year and then didn't see him again until 2020. So,
yeah.
But Alex Carrier, I think what I like about Alex Carrier is I think he plays a smart game first. Physically, he's not quite there, but he makes good decisions. And that is always what I liked about Ryan Ellis is Ryan Ellis was smaller, great offensive skill set. I mean, a really, really good offensive player. But it was always about his decision-making that stood out to me. Ellis, but like just in transition was so smart, always pinching at the right time, jumping up into the play at the right time. Alex Carrier is kind of a smaller version of that. Maybe a lesser version of that. So I think he's a pretty skilled player. No reason to disrupt that. Okay. So just a quick reset. Seven, I have Borbiecki. I have Lozon six, Borbiecki seven. You have those flip-flopped.
Right.
No big change there. Fifth, Fabroke. Fourth, Carrier. We both have.
Right.
We differ on third. So who do you have ranked number third in terms of the Predators defenseman?
For three, I had Ryan McDonough. And, you know, I'm going to be honest. I'll tell you why I have him at three. First off, he's coming to the Predators from the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I don't know, Alex, if you've been paying attention to hockey the past few years or not, but it's hard to know, not much.
No.
Just looking at the numbers, right?
checking the spreadsheet.
Well, those spreadsheets are made up of stats from players, and those players play on teams. And McDonough played for the Tampa Bay Lightning, which have been a pretty good team. You've got to think over the past three seasons, they won the Stanley Cup twice and then went to the finals again a third time. And unfortunately, I wanted the Avalanche to win at that point, but I'm sure he was disappointed that they weren't able to make it a three-peat. Now, because of that, I think for me, you know, I'm looking at the team that he's playing on. They're pretty stacked defensively. They've got a lot of good players. So I haven't had a chance to see him and how he fits into the Predators scheme, where he's going to play, who he's going to play with, and the type of game he's going to bring to this particular team. So I was hesitant to put him any higher than third. I assume he's going to be, you know, probably on the first or second pairing. I don't think they would play him lower than that. And I don't necessarily think that first or second pairing really matters in ranking someone, whether they're in the top two or three and four. But I feel like he could come to this team and be a very, very big part of it. But much like Lozon, I haven't seen anything with McDonough on this team. So I'm hesitant to put him much higher.
You put a lot of weight in like guys that you've seen and what you actually have watched in person. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think it would be easy to watch the Lightning and not see Ryan McDonough stand out because of all their other stars. So even if you are watching the Lightning and winning those two Stanley Cups, I mean, he had a lot of amazing plays and a really, really solid defensive efforts, but like it would be easy to not notice it. So unless you watched every minute. So I think there's nothing wrong with that. I would put Ekholm third behind McDonough because to me, Ekholm stands as a really good example of where the Predators are at with their defenseman sort of development. And that is they find guys who can really excel in a certain area, and then they kind of have to squeeze them into a role that tests them somewhat. And I think Ekholm has sort of tested the limits of his upper abilities. I really don't think that Ekholm is a top two talent on any NHL team. I think he's like a third or fourth, and meaning not a third or fourth liner, but like a third or fourth defenseman on most teams. Just because I think there's too many kind of holes in his game. I think too many times he doesn't have the speed to keep up. He makes some rushed decisions at both ends. You know, I'm picking nits here, right? I mean, he's still very good. I mean, I'm putting him as the third best defenseman on this team. But I think he's reached the absolute ceiling of what he can be in the NHL. And that's not a top two defenseman on the team. The fact that he had to be the top two defenseman on the team for so long last year is maybe why the defense wasn't so good. I mean, it was like Roman Josi, and then it was Mattias Ekholm, and that was it. And it was like the rest of the team was just kind of struggling to keep up. So, I mean, they had a lot of problems defensively, and I think Mattias Ekholm was he wasn't a huge problem or anything, but it's just like he's at the limits. He's at the limits of what he can do. So, a lot of skill. He can skate well. He's got the size. That's huge. But I see him as third. Ryan McDonagh, on the other hand, I think has considerably more skills at both ends than Mattias Ekholm. I think he's actually kind of a really significant step up from Mattias Ekholm. And I think that we'll see that. I think that if it pairs out like I think it will, and Ekholm is back with Josi, then I think we'll see McDonagh really shine in that second role with probably Carrier. So kind of what I'm thinking.
So you've got McDonagh at second?
Yes.
Well, I have Ekholm at second, and I see what you're saying. It makes a lot of sense. You know, I hadn't really contemplated the defensive, I guess, failings of the team last year when I was making these rankings as much as I was trying to look and say, okay, well, these are the guys I've seen, these are the guys I know, and these are new guys. Where do I think they're going to fit? Now, when you put it that way, you're probably right. I'm not going to change what I'm going to say because I want to wait and see. But I have Ekholm at second, of course, mainly because I'm not 100% sure what McDonagh is going to do with the Predators. You know, if he comes in and sets the world on fire, like you're saying, and really drastically improves the defense of the team, then sure, I think Ekholm moves to three. But I've got to see that happen. So that's not a great reason for having him at two, but that's why I've got him at two.
Got it.
Wait, okay. Who's left?
So at number one, Ben Harper.
That's right.
Number one is obviously Roman Josi, the best defenseman in the league. At least he should have been last year. He was not, because Cale Makar was kind of insane. He's just like an alien. So, but I think either way, Roman Josi is just not even close. It's just like a one. And then Ryan McDonagh for me is pretty significantly behind him. And then significantly after him is Ekholm. You have him a little bit tighter, I think, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. All right. That wraps it up. That's our ranking. So we've got all those guys ranked. Before we move on to what we're going to talk about next, I do want to talk to you about Relax the Back. We are still brought to you by Relax the Back. If you want to live better, feel better, and sleep better every day, you've got to check out Relax the Back. They've got tons of customized comfort options for the office, relaxing at home, sleeping at night. They've got ergonomic office chairs, zero gravity chairs, all perfect for getting your spine in the correct position so you can work better every day, but also sleeping at night. If you're looking for sleep options, they've got the Technogel, the Tempur Ergo Smart Base, wedge systems, and posture pillows for getting you in the correct natural position for sleeping. Recovery options, massage chairs, recliners, foot massagers, back massagers, all the massagers you could want right there in the store. What store is that, you ask? It is the Relax the Back store in Green Hills, 2020 Glen Echo Road. Go to Green Hills. A sleep agent is on hand every day. You got to talk to Glenn. He owns the store. And if you talk to him, you got to ask him about the four pillars of wellness. Go in there and say, Glenn, I'm here because On the Preds talked about you guys. What are the four pillars of wellness? Spoiler alert. Here's what he'll say. Healthy sleep, healthy body, Healthy Work and Healthy Mind. Go check it out. Okay. Well, I had a very healthy mind when I watched what we're about to watch, because this has been on the internet for quite some time. I mean, this thing that we're about to talk about is not a new thing. We did not discover this. I just wanted to talk about it because it looked fun. And I don't know if this is going to work, but I'm going to try to share my screen with you, Sean, even though people at home can't see this, so I can play the audio. If I play the audio on my, I think that might be the only way to do it. Here's what we're watching. There in 1991, there was a promotional ad for this restaurant called The Sizzler. If you don't know what The Sizzler is, well, Sean, tell them what The Sizzler is. What was it?
So, you know, I grew up with The Sizzler. Sizzler was a part of my childhood. I grew up in the Bay Area of California, home to many a Sizzler. And what The Sizzler is a restaurant where it's not just, Alex, it's not just a buffet. It doesn't just have a salad bar and a dessert bar. It also is a full steakhouse. So you don't just go in and get the buffet, right? You can go in and order a steak if you want. You can go in and order, get some good meat and potatoes, sit down, you know, with your family and enjoy a full meal. Well, maybe the kids say they want to go to the buffet, or maybe for me as a kid, you know, I didn't have an advanced palate. I liked my things bite-sized and fried. So, you know, to go to a restaurant as a kid, it was kind of like, do they have, like, you know, popcorn shrimp? Because that's probably what I'm going to get. So, you know, for my dad, my mom, they're like, hey, you know, we don't want to go to a popcorn shrimp restaurant. But I could always make an argument to go to The Sizzler, because they could get what they wanted. And they didn't have to wait around for a kid's meal. I could just go to the bar and get what I wanted and start eating immediately.
Mm-hmm. So I find that that's fascinating. And I think that the Sizzler as an idea is a very, the odd thing, even though it came out in 91, I think it's a very 80s feel. They did become more popular in the 90s, but for reasons I'll talk about later, I think they actually fell off in the 90s. But here's the ad. It's a 4-minute commercial. That's what's crazy here. It's a 4-minute promotional ad. I don't even know what channel this would have come on. It's almost like they sold this. It's almost like they made this commercial for people to buy one or to franchise one or build one in their town. It was almost like for city planners, as opposed to for, you know, TV ads in between NFL Monday Night Football or something. It was just So here we go.
I don't remember seeing anything this big. I also can hear the music.
It starts off. We've got just some really interesting music. So we've got this awesome music, and I'm gonna pause right here, because what we're seeing here, since people can't see this, we're just seeing a montage of different kind of a very very Americanized things. For some reason, there's a dog catching a frisbee. There's a girl playing baseball. There's a construction worker. And we've got this really good music. I'll just let it play here. Terrible form. Okay, what do you want to say?
First off, I mean, it's Americana. You know, I it wouldn't be out of place, like with a John Cougar Mellencamp song playing over it or something. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that we go from Americana to like just random boat captain. Just a boat captain with a child. I'm not really sure.
This was clearly filmed like at a marina. This was filmed like in a marina, probably like in California somewhere. And they just got some people, dressed them up as sea captains and as sailors, and then just shot it right next to the marina there. But if we keep going, there's some really interesting voiceover that's about to happen here. Now we get the Sizzler, inside looks of the Sizzler. There's the sailor with the ship, the carrier in the background too.
First off, his hair is too long to be in the military, so
that's true.
I don't buy
here we
that
go.
At all.
Overdub.
All over America, a quiet revolution has been taking place. More and more, both parents are working, and raising families. Life seems to be moving faster than ever, and Americans have rediscovered, are redefining what's really important in their lives. They want quality in their personal life, in their business life, in the goods they purchase, and in the food they eat. They want good, basic home cooking, quality food, and they want choices, variety, all at a reasonable price.
Okay, I'm going to stop right there. So the idea of this being a quiet revolution is a really fascinating point. That people have been, there's been grassroots campaigns to try to get restaurants like this in their neighborhoods, and that it's been something that has been brewing for decades. I really love that idea. That's so fascinating. Such an interesting campaign strategy for this marketing. When all we're seeing on the screen, aside from some random shots of a carousel, which I can't figure out,
that's a weird one.
Just some really bland looking like steaks and shrimp and salads and dessert options and Italian food that is just like it is the most glossed over, sanitized. They really had not perfected how to put food on camera yet, and I think that's really stands out in this. That hit a peak in the 90s for sure, and by the early 2000s. Food was looking great. Like you see a commercial for a Big Mac and you're like, that thing looks amazing. But they hadn't figured it out yet in 1991. And now here's the interesting part. The commercial takes a turn about 2 minutes in where all of a sudden we get some subplots. But what were you going to say?
Well, I mean, it's funny because they're talking about a quiet revolution. They're talking about variety and choice, but they're really not even showing a lot of food. And what I think they want you to understand is that food or a restaurant, it's not about the food you eat. It's about the experience. It's about how you get there. It's about, you as a generic foreman at a construction site, you've been working hard all day for what we assume to be a modest salary. And when you come home, because now, as they mentioned, both parents are working. So it's not like this is Susie Homemaker at home waiting to make him a hot meal. No, both parents are working. I assume the other generic construction foreman is his wife. Maybe they work together. I'm not really sure. It's not clear.
Yeah.
But do they, these busy, up and coming, masters of industry, do they have time to come home and prepare the type of meal that their family needs? No. So where do you go to get this type of meal, Alex?
You go to the Sizzler.
Sizzler.
The revolution started at the construction site where the guy decided, I need a place where I can get some shrimp scampi, a salad with as much ranch dressing as I want to put on it. Bucket of ranch and a steak. Now, but the subplots really emerge here in the second part. So, by the way, if you want to watch these, just go to my Twitter, at AlexRD1. I posted... I had to split it in two parts because it's 4 minutes. You can't put longer than a 2 minute video on Twitter. So we're at the end of part one. Americans want value.
It's true.
The right to choose, we're offering much more by holding to traditions, yet changing with the times.
And that's the quote that's at the very end of part one, holding to traditions and changing with the times. That quote to me sticks out as one of the most important of the entire thing because, the holding to traditions part is like, we've got food that you can eat, like, that's literally the tradition. Yes. The tradition is 100%. We have food. And the changing with the times is them and just inventing this like want. This like,
well,
the times, Alex, are changing because we're forcing them to.
Alex, people desired, I'd want to say for decades, they desired a buffet and they couldn't have it. They weren't ready, is what it was. It's like, this is what we want. And then like the world was like,
look at the screen right now. Look at the screen.
Oh my gosh.
That's where we're about to go, but keep going.
I'm really excited. Now, the thing I want to point out here about this too is that That line, by holding to, I've got the lyrics up because that's where my life is. By holding to traditions, yet changing with the times, choices and selections, choices and directions, choices that can add a little freedom in your life. Now, listen to this. This is a change in the way it's delivered because what you've had up until this point is the voiceover. But before that, you had a choir. right? It wasn't a huge choir, but they were male voices. They were female voices. This is by a much more, what's the word I'm looking for? A little rougher, gravelly voiced male singer by himself talking about this. And what he's doing is he's trying to help usher you as the patriarchal representation of American society up until you have basically America before Sizzler, and he's getting ready to introduce you to America after Sizzler. And so what he's doing is he's saying, look, I'm the old way. I'm the male-driven society, and I'm here to tell you that, look, things are going to change a little bit, but it's okay, and I'm going to tell you it's okay. And then the next thing you know, and Alex, I'm going to let you bring this up, because we know there's one thing that sells on TV. What sells?
Sex.
Sex sells. You know what there hasn't been in this yet? Sex. There hasn't been any sex. None.
So, all right. We are part two begins with the introduction of our main character. We're halfway through this film, and we have not yet met our main character. And our main character is a lady. I can only really refer to her as Hungry Girl. I think maybe thirsty is a better apt term.
She's thirsty.
She's perhaps maybe more thirsty than hungry, shall we say. But she definitely – what one thing I'll say about this performance before we move on is she's really going for it.
Oh, yeah. Full sin on this one.
We're talking dramatic theatrics going on right here. You got to watch this on my Twitter. But you won't see, obviously, what we're talking about if you're just listening to this. But if you go back and watch the very beginning of part two – Hungry Girl is coming on strong, right as these lyrics that Sean just read.
Sizzler is the one.
All right.
Okay. It happened.
Okay. Get a little freedom in your life. Well, we have. If you watch the if you watch part two, you see.
Guess who's back?
Guess. Hungry Girl is back, and she has stolen somebody's husband. So, she clearly was not just there to pick up some shrimp. And
she was definitely there for the buffet experience because she wanted to make choices.
Exactly. She was there for the buffet experience. I think she also, now the guy is not blameless here. I think clearly this guy was on the prowl and he got what he wanted too. So it's a consensual thing, but it comes out of nowhere with this. There's some other characters in here. There's a girl, a woman coming up that I think, is doing a really good impersonation of Jack Nicholson when he played the Joker in Batman. She's got the triangular facial expression going on. Watermelon Kid, I think, is a really solid role, and I think that kid actually took it very seriously. Did a little method acting, really found the what the role was supposed to be.
He found his why.
Yeah. There she is. Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Here we go. Explanation time.
Where you create delicious combinations just the way you want them. It's a restaurant within a restaurant with all the value, quality, and freedom of choice Americans want.
Okay, so one thing about that is, he talks about you can create all these combinations as you want them. Right as he says that, okay, so they're showing a bunch of food here. They're showing like onion rings and burgers and salads and fruit and stuff. And then it gets to the point where he's like, you can make delicious combinations just the way you want them. And as he's saying that, they're just pouring chocolate sauce on top of a sundae, because that's what every kid wants to do. It's just like, I want to get a burger, but put chocolate on. I want to get all the cookies and stack them up and pour chocolate all over everything.
It's food porn is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's food porn.
I mean, 100% what's going on there. And I want to just say, you know, you mentioned that the hungry girl has stolen someone's man, and you say he's not blameless. No, he's not. I think, you know, if you really get into the subplot of this, what I think the Sizzler wants people to understand is much like the green world in Shakespearean works, the world, like the social order is turned on its head. And so what you've got to understand is that in this new post-Sizzler America, women can choose who they're dating. They're not going to be led around by men. She's at the buffet. She sees something she likes. She's going to sample it. You know, she kisses the guy.
She's got a tantalizing combination.
And, you know, I guess the thing is, he knows that he's been caught, right? He's aware that he's been caught because he turns around and sees the camera and realizes the camera's there. And there's just a glimpse, just a moment of shock and concern on his face. But then he goes, you know what? I'm at the Sizzler. It doesn't matter. The rules don't apply here the way they do in the regular world. Exactly. So he goes back, he goes in for the kiss, and he does not shy away from that opportunity. And so I think the message is being sent that, you know what, when you come to Sizzler, it's not going to be the way things used to be. You may come in and it's like 1950s America, but you're going to leave and it's the future. And women can do what they want to do. You know, men aren't the only ones in charge. Men and women can get jobs and they can work. And by golly, if you want a pound and a half of chocolate syrup on ice cream, go ahead and pour it on there, kid, because you'll get a third set of teeth. It's fine.
Let's finish it up here.
It's ahead of the competition. Sizzler for the 90s. Exactly what America wants.
Guy with the dog. Wet hair girl. Pause real quick. Wet hair girl creeps me out. I'm not going to lie. This is the horror movie point of this. Why is her hair so wet?
Well, she's wearing a sweatband. I'm assuming
she did not come from a run. If she came from a run, she has a biological problem because that is way too much sweat.
Okay, you're probably right. But what if it just, look at that. You know, is her face wet too?
No, it's just her. She dunked her head in something.
Maybe you zoom in at a ranch.
I don't know. Carousel again. The carousel. I don't know. Understand. There's water. There's Watermelon Kid. I think he's locked in.
He's found his why.
Project manager, construction crew. I don't know why.
And then fashion hats.
Dude Ranch. And then we finish fake on sailor. This shot. Sorry, what?
Fake sailor.
Fake sailor. We finish on the shot of the sailor with his girlfriend. He just came off the boat from his tour. The USS Sizzler in the background. And it's a good way to... It's not a bad finish. I'm not going to lie, but... Especially because 91, you know, Persian Gulf War and all that was going on. That was probably a big topic. They were like, we got to put some Gulf War imagery in there. And the girl with the baseball, we didn't talk about this, but you and I are both baseball. We're baseball dudes. Boy, she's got a lot of work to do on that swing. I mean, she popped out to the third baseman, I think. That was bad.
Well, here's the thing is she knows enough to know that she hit the ball. But she just spins in a circle to celebrate.
Gotta run it out. I mean, what are you doing? Don't pimp your pop out. At least run to first. I don't even, and I guess we get are these, wait a minute. Are those the waiters? I guess they're waiters.
Yeah. Okay. They wore bow ties.
Oh yeah. We got to get the Sizzler. And it's, they call it a restaurant. So it's the final shot is a Sizzler. With buffet court and grill, and it says a restaurant within a restaurant. That was what people opined for in the 90s. That was what the Quiet Revolution was about. Here's what I wanted to say about that. So what's interesting about the 90s, one of the reasons I want to talk about this is because I'm reading this book called The 90s, and it's by Chuck Klosterman.
What's it about?
It's about the 90s.
Okay.
It's a fantastic book. It's just a really great tour of the 90s, of all the different parts. And one of the big theories, or one of the big kind of points that he makes about the 90s is that it sort of began, as opposed to traditionally, you know, the 90s didn't start January 1st, 1990. Oh, we're in the 90s now. Oh, now we get to have, you know, all the things that the 90s have. We're done with the 80s. things are more fluid than that. His take is, you know, a lot of people think that the 90s really started with the Berlin Wall falling in 1989. His take, and I think I agree with him, is that if you think the cultural 90s really began in 91, when three albums all came out like the same week. It was Nirvana's Nevermind, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Blood Sugar Sex Magik, and Pearl Jam's first album, which I think was a self-titled album, maybe. All came out within a week. Think about that. The three most like influential albums of the 90s, those three influential 90s bands, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, all came out within a week. And then immediately after that starts the grunge scene and total cultural revolution. Everything changes. The excess of the 80s is over. It's no longer about success. It's about anti-success. It's about counterculture rather than culture. You want to be against culture. And what's so great about this commercial is it came out like right as that was happening. And then like Sizzler basically died. Like it became this like relic almost immediately. And almost immediately people made fun of it. And I know you didn't, because you were just talking about how much you liked it. I'm talking about from a realistic standpoint, it was never that popular. And it didn't go anywhere, despite this quiet revolution that this ad company tried to start.
Does he say that in the book, that it went away, that it died?
No, I mean, how many Sizzlers are there right now?
So many Sizzlers.
How many?
Well, I'm going to look it up, but I'm going to tell you, Sizzler is a West Coast thing. That's why you're not familiar with it.
How many are there out there? I mean, it's not like how many Sizzlers are there left? There are 107 Sizzlers left. Come on, that's tons. That's two in every state. That's nothing.
But they're not in every state because it's a West Coast thing.
There's more Loveless cafes in Tennessee than there are Sizzlers.
Well, how many Loveless cafes are in California?
I'm just saying, like, it's not. Look, they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 2020.
A lot of people filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 2020.
That's a good point. Fair point. So I'm just saying, it's not like it wasn't a revolution, right? I mean, when was the last time you even ate at any kind of a buffet court style restaurant like that?
I mean, it hasn't been that long.
Sean, please tell me it's been longer than 10 years.
No. What? You see a buffet, you gotta go.
Tell me that you as a kid in California eating popcorn shrimp was the last time that it happened. It didn't happen like last week, did it?
It was a Chinese buffet less than 2 months ago.
I think a Chinese buffet is different. It's different. It just is. That was the quiet revolution. That was the revolution right there.
That was
a different kind of revolution.
I'm eating popcorn shrimp at both of them, okay? And everybody's having a good time. Everybody, especially that guy in a sweater.
The guy in the sweater. I think one of my favorite parts is...
Is he eating a flower? What is he doing?
He put a ton of lettuce on that burger. He put much lettuce. Because he can. It was part of the idea. Anyways, I wanted to talk about that because I thought it was a fascinating commercial. And also, if you want... I would strongly recommend reading this book. If you grew up in the 90s, if 90s are a big part of your life, like... If you're my age, late 30s, okay. If you're even just early 30s and you want to check out a really good tour of what the 90s were really like and like all the different culture and politics and sports and everything, the 90s by Chuck Klosterman, and you will see why Sizzler failed. You will see the reason why Sizzler's Quiet Revolution never took off, because people didn't want these kinds of things. They were against these kinds of things, and even the popular culture wanted specifically good things. Like, I mean, you know, McDonald's and Nike and, you know, Air Jordan, and the dominant music culture of the 90s was about really anti-established. I mean, all the different rap albums that came out, all the, you know, Nirvana and Red Hot Chili Peppers, I've already talked about, Alanis Morissette, like all these different like really popular. Things were more less about being something that popular culture wanted and something popular culture did not want. So,
you know, I'm having a hard time with your take on this. It's a cold take. Everybody universally loves Sizzler.
Well, it's a good debate anyways.
I mean, let's look, I'm gonna look at the menu right now. Oh man, look at that burger.
Oh, where's the closest one you said? You said the closest.
Well, I don't know what's the closest. It's either Gallup, New Mexico or Puerto Rico.
Okay, so
there's a ton in Puerto Rico.
Take a boat or a plane. The closest that we could drive to would be Gallup, New Mexico. How far is that? And how far of a drive is that? Day and a half? 2 days?
I mean, it depends on if you're stopping, if you're switching drivers. I don't know what your plan is. Like, I can't drive at night, so, like, that's not going to work.
You drive during the day, I'll drive at night.
Okay, well, let me see how long it'll take us to get there.
And we will listen to all of Nirvana's Nevermind, all of Pearl Jam's first album, and all of Red Hot Chili Peppers' Blood Sugar Sex Magik. That'll get us, like, to Texas.
No, it won't.
Maybe that won't even get us to Arkansas.
Texas.
That won't even get us out of Tennessee, I don't think.
All right, let's see. Hold on, we're about to find... Oh, good God. It's 19 and a half hour drive.
Oh, that's easy. That's less than a day.
Yeah, I'll drive on the sun.
We go eat at a good restaurant here at like 6 o'clock.
Okay.
I'm gonna need the car. We get in the car. I start driving. I drive the first 10 hours. You sleep.
Drive all night. Drive till the sun.
You drive the next 9 hours. We're there. Well, time change. We'll be there at like 4 o'clock. We'll be at like 4 o'clock New Mexico time. We rest for an hour and then we eat at the Sizzler.
You know, it's a good idea. I'm listening because I'm going to tell you, I have a fear that, you know, it's the primacy, recency, whatever effect. You know, the Sizzler came to me at a very important developmental stage in my life. I was probably 10, 11 years old. And quite frankly, maybe my memories are a little bit filled with nostalgia because that was the place that I knew that if I brought it up in just the right way, at just the right time, there was a chance that we would eat something besides baked liver. So because that was a thing my parents made for dinner sometimes. I know, but it's okay. I didn't eat it. I just wept in the corner.
Where if you go back that the memory is spoiled?
I don't know. Maybe it's a memory that needs spoiling, or apparently there's just like a bunch of hungry chicks there. I'm not sure.
Hey, so there you go. Bachelorship. But
let me ask you a question. And this is for anybody out there listening and in podcast land too. I want to know this. Alex, have you ever worked at a restaurant?
I have. I worked at several.
Did you ever work at a restaurant with a buffet? Even a salad bar?
No, never.
Okay. You mentioned it earlier, but people are disgusting when it comes to ranch dressing at a self-serve like salad bar. Like I'm talking like I was doing dishes
that,
once.
I remember that from college, like, you know, the cafeteria in college, right?
Just like I'd get a plate back that clearly had been someone's salad plate. And there's like a quarter inch or half inch, like deep, just pool of ranch dressing left over, mind you, not just poured on it, but left over from the salad they dressed, which, you know, with all the nooks and crannies that a salad has to offer, man, think about how much actual ranch dressing was consumed. It's absolutely disgusting. Every time I pick up one of those plates, I was judging someone very hard.
Yeah. I know what you mean about not wanting to spoil the memory. I have this recurring fantasy that I could go back to the Bellevue Mall circa 1997, 96. I was 12. The Bellevue Mall was a staple of the mid 90s for me. I mean, all, you know, the food court was there, but there was also this Tilt arcade area. There was a video game store, a bookstore, a music store. I mean, there was several different areas for just teenagers to hang out. And I have a feeling that if I went, I have this fantasy feeling like, I wish I could go back to that. But I bet if I went back, I would be like, man, that's kind of blows. I'll leave.
Yeah. It's like all those people who are like, man, I wish I could go back to high school. Like, trust me, I work in one every day.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
You're not missing anything. It's not as cool as you remember it being.
Exactly.
Trust me. I don't know. I think it'd be worth the road trip to go to the Sizzler.
Okay.
Maybe the Sizzler wants to pay us to go do that.
We've talked a lot of free advertising for them on this show. I think we're fine because we're not currently sponsored by another restaurant, and also there's not even a Sizzler within an 18-hour drive of where we're recording right now. So, having said all that, I really hope that everyone listened through this whole thing. And if you did listen to the whole thing, please let us know because this was a fun experiment. And maybe we'll do more stuff like this in the coming weeks while we're not really having a lot to talk about with hockey. But I don't think there's a comparison, a hockey comparison to be made here. Maybe there is. But and hey, if there's another old 80s or 90s promotional ad that you want us to review and talk about, tweet us, put it in a Twitter, tweet it to us, and maybe we'll talk about it next time.
Well, and I think too, like, I think this Sizzler thing could work, because think about it, you know, they could say, if this works out, they pay for our drive out there, they pay for our meal, our drive back home, you know, they could say, the Sizzler, it's worth driving 20 hours for. If we like the meal, you know, and that's the thing, is that's a good slogan. I think that could sell some buffet tickets or whatever it is that's going on there now. And at the same time, hey, if it's maybe not worth driving 20 hours for, they can pay for our silence.
Maybe. Right. There you go. Maybe also they can pay us to do another podcast specifically Sizzler focused.
Oh, man.
So we can have a podcast within a podcast, just like a restaurant within a restaurant.
We could record a podcast at the Sizzler.
I think that's what we have to do. So next time that the Predators play in Phoenix, we drive out there. That's what we're doing. I've already decided.
Phoenix, huh?
We're budgeting this out. Well, I mean, Gallup, New Mexico, and then you drive to Phoenix. Maybe we could go to Dallas first, and then, I don't know, we'll figure it out.
Not even close.
What's not even close?
Dallas.
Well, it's on the way.
No, it's not.
Sure it is.
No, it's going to take 21 hours to go through Dallas.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, that's going to do it for today's show. Please check out all of our hockey coverage at azsports.com. And more news coming maybe over the next week or so. Don't want to spoil anything there, but there will be more news out very soon. But in the meantime, follow me on Twitter at AlexDarty1. You can also find those two videos on my Twitter as well. And then also, Sean has changed his Twitter handle at SCSNSH. So as in SCS Nash or NSH Nashville. You know, you get it. SCSNSH. And we will see everybody next week.